Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for joining me on the NOLA Drink Show. Always a pleasure to have you along for the ride here on the program. Kicking off your happy hour and hopefully getting your weekend going in the right direction. And as always, to my radio listeners, the views of this host and this show do not reflect the views of much of what you will find on this station. That's right. Got a really good show coming up for you this time around. We're joined for the first time in 3.5 years, my friend Lisa Wicker. Lisa is the president and master distiller. A little breaking news on that front we'll talk about in the interview. For Widow Jane Distillery, a very fine craft whiskey producer located in the Red Hook area of Brooklyn, New York. Lisa was on all the way back in October of 2018, and a lot has gone on in the world of Widow Jane, that is putting it mildly, since that time. So it's great to have her back on. We crossed paths at the recent New Orleans Bourbon Festival, and that was actually the first time I was able to meet her in person, because we had done a phone interview way back when, and we got to talking and said, hey, got to get you back on the show. And Lisa participated on a really great panel, Women in Whiskey, with 3-4 other female luminaries in the whiskey world. It was a great presentation. And actually, we talk about that in our podcast only segment, Another Shot with NOLA Drink. So if you are listening on the radio, go to noladrinks.com. The podcast is there waiting for you, where we always do that segment where we go a little further down the road with our guests. And that's a lot of what we talk about with Lisa. And being a role model and a female leader in the whiskey world is kind of most of what we talk about during that segment. But we talk about all the things that have gone on with Widow Jane. We sample a couple of their really good expressions coming up here in the next few segments and stuff like that. Really good interview and great to connect with Lisa again. Couple shows I want to put on your radar, the next two that we're working on. The next show, the plan is, we'll be chatting with the folks from Bayou Boogaloo, the very fine music festival coming up here shortly, third weekend in May, if I'm not mistaken. Don't have it right in front of me, but coming up here in New Orleans on Bayou St. John, a really great festival. It has grown massively, and you know they're really expanding their food and drink program. The music lineup gets better every year. They're back like everybody else after taking time off due to COVID, and I never really had a chance to chat with them before, so we're going to be doing a little preview of Bayou Boogaloo, and then after that, we're going to be getting together with a sort of a roundtable conversation with a group of New Orleans concierges. That's right. My friend Leah Hoyt, who is the president of the New Orleans Concierge Association, will be joining me along with two of her colleagues. We got a couple lined up, I think, already, at least one. And we're just going to be talking about, you know, what's going on in the world of being a concierge in New Orleans, kind of coming out of COVID. What are we seeing in the world of lodging and hospitality here as things come back? We know it's such an important economic driver, hospitality that is, in the city, and the hotel portion of that industry is certainly no exception. Lots of jobs and all that good stuff. And it's just a great read when you talk to these folks, because they're so plugged into events and venues and kind of have a unique angle on what they see and where they send people. So I'm looking forward to bringing you that show as well. We're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, friends, and then we're going to be back with our featured interview chatting with Lisa Wicker from Widow Jane Distillery. Come on back.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll.
Located at the Frenchman Hotel, Midnight Revival pairs live music with an exciting beverage program. Our new spot on Frenchman Street offers classic cocktails, but it's the tropical libations that will keep you coming back. Midnight Revival even has our own take on the hurricane called the Champion of the World, made with passion fruit liqueur and a blood orange puree. Visit Midnight Revival at 417 Frenchman Street, follow Midnight Revival NOLA on social media, or visit midnightrevival.com for the latest updates on sips and sounds that await.
Back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. Happy to have you here as always, you know that. And very happy to bring you my next guest. It's been 3.5 years in the making, I'll say. My friend Lisa Wicker, who is the president and head, dare I say, master distiller at Widow Jane. We're just having a conversation about that. Welcome back to the show, Lisa. It's really good to see you.
Brian, it's so good to see you, you know, after our big long gap with COVID and the fact that I got to meet you in person recently and we're revisiting everything today. I'm really appreciative. Thank you.
Absolutely. It's great. It's great to have you on again. And we were talking before we went on the air. We've been chatting for a while. And it was October 15th of 2018 was when you were actually on the first time. And a lot, I think it's fair to say, a lot has gone on in the world of Widow Jane in those 3.5 intermittent years. And so why don't we start here, Lisa? Because we talked quite a bit about your background and stuff, but would you tell us just a little bit about how you found yourself at Widow Jane? And then I'd kind of like to just talk about where you guys have been since 2018, which is everywhere now.
Yes, I wonder if I was even permanently or if I was still a consultant when we talked the last time. I was a commercial winemaker. I moved to Kentucky pushing almost 12 years ago now to learn how to distill. I built a winery there and wanted to learn how to distill. I moved into distilling with Limestone Branch, the old Yellowstone label, with Steve Beam and his brother Paul. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I got fired after 3 years. I was because Luxco purchased them and replaced me with a guy from St. Louis. And it's one of those, you know, best case, worst case things. And it, you know, pushed me into a place that I thought I was going to have to go back to winemaking, but I was fortunate to stay into distilling. And Ted Huber picked me up at Starlight, and he just added a grain distillery and had a, you know, winery and brandy distillery for decades before that. And then thought I was going to stay there forever. And Drew Colstein, the master distiller for Willett, who's a family friend, threw my name in the hat for a project in Bardstown. And I built the first. So I left Starlight. I thought, like I said, they're two, Ted and Dana Huber, two of the nicest people to walk the face of the earth. But I moved on to the project in Bardstown, where I, you know, my primary residence is, and built Preservation and was there for a year or so, and then went out on my own and started Saints and Monsters Consulting. During that time, I had started as the senior consultant for George Washington's whiskey at Mount Vernon. And through a series of very fortunate events, my name got put in front of my boss at the time, and he called me and asked me if I would, you know, come to work for them. And we agreed that I would. At first I told him no. Then he called me back and we talked, and he flew up to Bardstown and took me to dinner. And 10 minutes into dinner, I thought, well, I'm going to go to work for this guy. Right. And so we agreed that I'd come on as a consultant. I could keep my other clients. And then after a year and a half, I got a phone call from him, and he said, I really want you, you know, to come on full time. Can you please dismiss your other clients and work for us exclusively? And so at that time I was director of distilling for all the brands in the portfolio. We had five at the time, we have six now.
Okay.
But I'm spending all my time at Widow Jane. And so again, just 5 or 6 months later, he called again and readjusted and named me president of Widow Jane and head distiller.
Right. And so, then as of 2 weeks ago, let's go ahead and complete that for me.
Yeah, my title is, you know, I finally, after a lot of consideration and a beautiful article by my friend Mike Beach about what it means and what it takes to be a master distiller, it was time. So I've taken the title master distiller after 12 years, yeah.
And very
21 making alcohol for 21 years, 22 years, I guess.
You've paid your dues, Lisa. And I think we were talking about this before we went on the air. It's very well deserved. And one thing I do appreciate you about you is you're a very humble person, but this is very well deserved. And I couldn't think of a better person to be called a master distiller than yourself.
Thank you. This is the first time I've talked about it out loud, and it's making me tear up a little bit.
Oh, awesome. So we got some breaking news here on the NOLA Drink Show. It's almost like the first time when you were on in 2018, because you guys were kind of nascent when you were involved. And I think, you know, we're still in the process of converting the building, if I remember right. It was like a chocolate factory or something, wasn't it?
That's correct. And all the, you know, we're in a new phase now. All the chocolate equipment was moved out, and the chocolate company, the chocolatier, moved to New Jersey with his family. And that was our first phase, right? And now we've expanded within that space, and we're still looking at building a new distillery. We put that on ice for a couple of years because of COVID, and we're in the thick of that now. In fact, you know, that's how I'm spending my mornings these days, was with the new project mostly. But yeah, it's a lot's happened. I mean, when you said 2018, it's like, oh my gosh, we have certainly come a long way.
Yeah, it's incredible because, you know, you guys were coming onto the scene at that time. And I think you guys were fairly new in Louisiana. I think it was actually, and I'm trying to recollect all this because I've had too much of an addled brain to remember 3.5 years ago, Lisa, but I think somebody, maybe it was like a PR company or somebody, reached out to me and just said, here's this new brand, check it out. And I thought the story was really interesting and where you're going. And now it's like you guys are everywhere. You were just at Bourbon Festival. And the reputation that you guys have developed is and due, you know, almost entirely to your work and your team's work, not almost entirely. It's fantastic, and you guys have just done so well.
Yeah, the brand itself is going to be 10 years old in October. You know, we're going to have throwing a 10-year anniversary party to celebrate that. Samson and Suri purchased the brand 5 years ago, and I've been with the company now for it'll be 5 years in this next month. I've been with the company for, and so, yeah, a lot, you know, in that time, a lot's happened. The vision has stayed the same and shifted all at the same time. And, you know, we've put together this most amazing team. I would put my team up against anybody. We're very small, but very mighty.
Yeah, there you go. Cool. So how many, we have a couple great expressions that we're going to get into in a little bit here, but how many expressions are you guys currently, I think it was one maybe or two when you were on originally, but I think you've got a lot more going on.
Yes. Originally it was a 10-year that was a single barrel. Yeah, and that was one of the things I was tasked with when I was hired, was to change it to a blend. And so I was tasked with blending it across Indiana, Kentucky, and Tennessee so that we did not have to drop the age statement. And the blending program took off, right? And so some of our single barrels aged into 12-year. And so we were selling through those so quickly, right? That was a bit of a concern to keep the balance in the rest of our product line. And then that aged into 13-year-old. And so then I ended up putting aside a whole lot of barrels that weren't coming in at proof. They were coming in, we proof all the, you know, those single barrels at 99, and they were coming in at 93, 95, 97, but they were spectacular juice. And so trying to figure out what to do, we kept stockpiling those. And then one day I, you know, called my boss and I'm like, you know what? I said, I think we should call this Unlucky 13 and we'll proof it down to the next proof point. You know, if it's 90, comes in at 97, I'll proof it down to 95 or 93. So we can get our famous mineral water in there. And he's like, Lisa, we're not calling anything Unlucky. We're going to call it Lucky 13. That program took off and we sold so many of those barrels. So it's like, we had to put the brakes on because the blending had taken off. I now do a blend across three states for Lucky 13 as well. It's also Indiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, but with some really fabulous old juice in it. And then, vaults, and we have the vaults, blends. That first one I did was a 14-year-old. I did a couple rounds of 15. The next one I'm going to do is also a 14 because I've got barrels turning 20 years old. Oh. And in order to keep those balanced, and I am going to actually drop, kind of counterintuitive, I'm actually going to drop the age statement on it so I can incorporate some younger juice in it.
Okay.
Balance out the 20-year-old as well. And so those vaults will always, you know, fluctuate 14, 15, maybe in the future we'll have a 16-year-old. We're sitting on a lot of stock, and that's the luxury of this job. And we have decadence. Decadence we cannot keep in stock. I promise everybody, I am working, we're working and we're overlapping batches and everything else, but you know, it just, you can't force it. You know, it's got to take its own time until it's ready. But it's also, you know, a standalone blend. I blend anywhere from 18 to 21 barrels for the decadence base blend. And then those get rebarreled into Crown Maple Syrup barrels. Oh. So they used our barrels for years for aging their syrup. And then we just put the process in reverse now as well. And so that product is, that was, we released that in March, 2020. Or we got it on the truck. We got it finished and on the truck in March, 2020. I can't remember exactly, but it was like, I kept joking. It was COVID comfort food.
Right. Okay.
And yes. And it just took off because, you know, my goal on it is not to make it sticky sweet, to definitely have the maple syrup in it, but I want that standalone whiskey blend. You know, I'm not trying to cover anything up. In fact, one of our warehouse guys told me one time, he's like, do we really have to put this in the barrels? He goes, this is one of the best blends I think you've ever done. Like, yes, put it in the barrel.
Put it in the barrel.
thank you for the compliment. But so that's, and then we have our ryes. We have the Applewood rye, and we have, which you and I are going to taste today on our American oak rye. But our rye program, we're getting ready to shake up a little bit. So I'm very excited about all the changes that are coming.
You see, there, you just rattled off a whole bunch of stuff that I've not ever tasted. So we're going to have to, I think I need to make a trip up in that direction, Lisa, sometimes. We've got to rectify some of that. Yeah.
I think so, too.
Yeah, because I didn't know about the vault stuff, and I didn't know about the decadent stuff either. Some of the stuff I know you're making is bourbon, and then some of the stuff is American whiskey. Is there kind of a what's the emphasis? And I'm not saying that you have to choose one over the other. Is it kind of the juices dictating how your sourcing is dictating your style? You know, kind of what are you trying to present maybe like in the big picture, balancing all the different expressions?
Really, we don't do any American whiskey. We do bourbon and rye.
Okay.
And in the future, we're laying it down as well. You know, we're laying down our own juice as well as sourcing. Really, it's, you know, blending. Thank goodness for us, blending took off, right? You know, I mean, it's definitely what our strong suit is. And we would be doing it whether we were getting the attention for it or not because of the types of juice that we're getting. But it certainly elevates, you know, something that's already lovely and beautiful. And, you know, we can make it a little bit richer and with a little more character. And sure. Okay. We're following the same footsteps with rye. Originally, when they released rye here, the label read that it was from a rye mash because it was under 2 years old. It was not straight rye. Now, everything we're dealing with is pushing up to 6 years old and obviously at minimum straight rye. And, you know, we're taking that and running with it. Our applewood program has just exploded. We use applewood staves out of Minnesota and add some richness to that rye base. So, yeah, that's where our product line is, you know, sort of, it's not locked in, but that's what's keeping us on our toes and as busy as we can possibly be right now.
That sounds like it. You've got a lot going on. How many states are you all in now as far as distribution goes?
50.
You're in all 50 now. Wow, that's amazing. So I wasn't lying when I said it's everywhere.
50 states and almost 30 countries at last count.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing. And so what is, if you don't mind me asking, what is the production level? And I know COVID's probably affected some things here and there, but kind of what's the target typically?
We don't have a target. We've gone like this. We're on radio. So I'm doing using my hands.
Yeah. You're using your hand and doing like a linear growth, like, exponential growth line there.
How much are you producing it every single month? We break our record from the month before. So I don't know where it's going to plateau. You know, we're looking at larger bottling lines and, you know, we've added more staff and sky's the limit, you know, as long as we can stay, you know, but our stocks are deep and may or may have not become a little bit deeper with the recent Heaven Hill purchase. So I have lots of wonderful juice to work with and I have this wonderful team that to work with. And like you said, sky's the limit. Who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. So Lisa, tell us we're going to take a break in about a minute and a half, but tell us about the Heaven Hill purchase and elaborate on that if you don't mind.
Dream come true. Of all the people that could have possibly purchased this, as soon as I found out it was Heaven Hill kicking the tires, I'm like, this, I kept my mouth shut. I didn't let anyone know that, after I was, you know, I was to be held in confidence anyway, but, and it was killing me, but I thought I cannot jinx this. I cannot take a chance that I'm the one that's going to spoil this deal. Cause literally my home in Bardstown is just stone's throw over a mile to the Heaven Hill Visitor Center. And not just that, it's the reputation, it's the family owned, it's the privately owned, it's the spectacular juice that they produce, and they are good people. Mm-hmm. They're just great to work with. And it's just, like I said, it's a dream come true. Of all the people that could have possibly purchased us, Heaven Hill would have been, I wouldn't have even guessed what Heaven Hill, because it's just beyond my wildest dreams, right?
Yeah. Congratulations. That's amazing. And I'm assuming they're letting you do your thing and kind of just, you know, lending a hand when it's needed and then letting you just do what Widow Jane does.
That's exactly right. In fact, they kept, you know, I still have the same bosses. They kept the whole Samson and Surrey structure in place. Our salespeople and advocacy people are just like blending into the Heaven Hill, you know, advocacy people and sales force. It couldn't be any better if you planned it and laid it out. It's just remarkable. Like I said, I still have my same boss and she's all great. Good. And
fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, let's do this, Lisa. Let's take a little break here and then we're going to come back. We're going to taste some whiskey, and we're going to talk a little bit more about Widow Jean, and you're going to be sticking around for our podcast only segment, Another Shot with Nola Drinks. So we're going to talk about some cool stuff you did at Bourbon Fest here in New Orleans not too long ago. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Nola Drink Show. Come on back.
Hey, everybody, Roger here with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Be sure to check out Nitty Grits Podcasts, a growing network of shows about food, drink, and culture. Visit southernfood.org for more.
I'm Liz Williams, host of Tip of the Tongue on the Nitty Grits Podcast Network. Join me and weekly guests for conversations about food and drink and the people who create food culture around the world. The show is for the curious, hungry for food knowledge. My new book, Nana's Creole Italian Table, about the Sicilian community in New Orleans, can be pre-ordered from Amazon. Learn more about Nitty Grits Podcast Network at southernfood.org.
Every afternoon when I wake up, I say a little prayer and drink up. Driving me home once more. There's an open Bible on the table and an empty bottle on the floor. Last night I thought I'd
die. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for joining us on the Nola Drink Show. We are chatting with Lisa Wicker, president and master distiller. That's right. Breaking news here on the Nola Drink Show. Master distiller at Widow Jean Distillery up in Brooklyn, New York. And we're going to taste a little bit, Lisa. I've been waiting patiently. No, that's not true, because I could have started drinking a lot earlier. But we waited till this segment so we could kind of focus on it a little bit. And so we're tasting the 10-year, which is lovely. I think I had it for the first time at Bourbon Fest about a month ago, and it's fantastic. Would you tell us about it? I need to drink it. So would you tell us about it while I taste?
Yeah, I need to taste too. Cheers, Brian.
Cheers.
I have to remind myself, right, what it tastes like. Yeah, the 10-year, when I started here, it was a single barrel. I was tasked with making it a blend, you know, to keep our 10-year age statement. And so I blend across Indiana, Kentucky, and Tennessee, and it's our flagship. I have blended, I think, close to 675 batches of 10-year now.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
So I know this whiskey inside and out. It doesn't take me as long to blend it. I know immediately when it's not working and when the batches are coming together the right way. And it's, you know, it's a joy to work with, right? And I think I've blended as many as a dozen in one day. And normally about five or six batches a day, but
okay.
It's
really lovely. I get some nice dark fruit and berry on it. It's really, really good. Well, would you tell us what the mash bill is, or is that a secret?
Well, you know what? I'd have to do, quite literally have to do gas chromatography, because I have got juice from more than one Kentucky distiller. I've got juice from Indiana, juice from Tennessee. So I know what the individual mash bills are, but when you blend them and the percentages are not the same all the time, I really cannot tell you what the mash bill is.
Sure, okay.
And it's not being coy. It's because I don't know.
Gotcha. Fair enough. Pretty corn heavy, right? Is that fair to say? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's really, really good. And so aged 10 years in American oak, of course. Well, let's talk a little bit about this, because we were talking about this during the break, and you were reminding me of some things that we talked about a few years ago. Water plays an important part of your story. And then you have this really interesting corn story that is just fascinating, and it also has to do with, like, state borders and all kinds of funky stuff.
I tell people we have a split personality, because we have our, you know, our sourced and blended whiskeys, and at the same time we're laying whiskey down. And I'm going to talk about the corn first. So on the other hand, we've been growing a one-of-a-kind heirloom cross. It's a cross between Wapsie Valley and Bloody Butcher corns. For people that don't understand heirloom corn, I always give heirloom tomatoes as an analogy. They have a little bit more personality than the hothouse red tomatoes that we're all used to, but we love the red hothouse tomatoes. It's just that there's a little bit more individuality with the other type. And same with the corn. We all love yellow dent bourbon. Who doesn't love yellow dent bourbon? But at the same time, the heirloom corn actually ends up being the flavor grain rather than the small grains being the flavor grains, you know, because we always talk about is it wheated bourbon or is it a high rye bourbon? And with heirloom corn is actually the grain that's, you know, influencing the flavor the most. For 2 years before COVID, and hopefully again this year, because we're actually planting as we speak, we have the largest heirloom corn crop for whiskey in the United States. And in the meantime, until we get a new distillery built here in Brooklyn, we're laying those barrels down at Castle and Key in Kentucky and grow at Peterson Farms in Kentucky. They grow for Makers and Sazerac and little bit for Heaven.
Great. So,
we were their first heirloom corn project. That they agreed to because our scale was so large. And so it's been a fun project working with them and their agronomist and agronomist from University of Kentucky. And anyway, so then our water is our major part of the story. And that's
Lisa,
the thing.
Lisa, let me ask you one question real quick about the corn before we move to the water. So part of the idea then is when you guys get the new distillery built in New York, you're going to be looking to grow the corn in New York then, right? Is that what you're hoping?
And we have a small still now, and we already grow that corn in New York for the small still. Yeah, you know, so that's all New York grown and produced. And it didn't make sense for us within New York laws to go ahead and grow in New York, put that all on the road, distill it in Kentucky and bring it back because I didn't have anyone here that could distill, you know, that we're looking for terroir, we're looking for scale, and they fit exactly what we were doing really well. And it gives me an opportunity to go home once in a while as well. So that part's... You know, cool. I love Brooklyn. I've fallen in love with Brooklyn. I get to Brooklyn, I miss Kentucky. I get back to Kentucky, I miss Brooklyn.
Fair enough. You get the best of both worlds, right? You can just bounce back and forth. So as soon as you're missing one, you go back and then, you know, reboot.
So the water.
Yeah, please tell us about the water.
The water is what unites all the Widow Jane whiskeys. The water is from Rosendale, New York. It's from a man-made cave. They had mined limestone out of it years ago. When the caves were abandoned, they filled up with this beautiful water, right? Because it's literally getting filtered through the limestone. Folklore, their Widow Jane mine is where Widow Jane gets its name. It's not where we get our water. It backs up on the same hillside as our cave, but you can actually visit the Widow Jane mine and go inside, and the acoustics are great. But needless to say, our mine is on the backside of the same hill, and it is under lock and key because of whiskey quality, right? But it's a mineral water. It's very close in recipe to a very famous French mineral water bottle, and it's almost a amount of magnesium and calcium, and it makes a lot of Widow Jane notes pop. And so it's interesting to take it from something that we've produced here on site or that we've sourced and blended and find some of the same notes in the whiskeys, even though they're not from the same origin. I encourage people, if they, you know, to do their own experiments at home. We don't have a cask strength whiskey. We never will, because we're always going to be adding proofing down with that water. Okay. But I encourage people to take a cask strength whiskey, let that famous French mineral water go flat, and then use some distilled water. Make sure it's not bottled water, because sometimes bottled water has mineral enhancement in it, but use some distilled water from the grocery store and cut that sample of whiskey with both of those different waters. They're both going to be delicious, but they're going to be very different notes that pop in them.
Okay, very interesting. And does that famous French begin with a P?
Possibly, yes.
Okay, possibly begins with a P as well. I just want to make sure that, like, you're telling people to do a science experiment. We want to make sure that they get the... you know, the right stuff in there. Okay, cool.
Yes, it does.
Awesome. Yeah, very interesting. So yeah, that's really cool. I'm going to have to play. We actually have distilled water here in the house because we have Drosera plants, which are sundews, which eat fruit flies, which is that's a conversation for another time, but I have distilled water on hand all the time. So I'm going to play science after this. So that's really neat. So that's a couple of the unifier. That's the unifying thing. And what you do is utilizing this special water, and that's not going to change. And that's part of the core.
Absolutely, because it's definitely part of our flavor profile as well. Yeah. So we don't do this obviously in Kentucky, but all the barrels that we lay down here too are all proofed down with the mineral water before it goes into the barrel.
Okay, gotcha. Now you guys have, we're going to take a break, Lisa, in about a minute and a half. You guys have a tasting room now, or a bar in the distillery. Do you guys keep a sample of the water on hand where somebody can taste the water when they come in, or?
We do not, because I have the only permit of its kind. It took a year and a half of my life to withdraw a food grade product from a cave in New York. We had a water permit. We called a water permit that was totally appropriate. But one of these days, the FDA has been threatening in the 22 years I've been making alcohol for us to ingredient label. Yeah. So I thought, oh, I'm going to get out in front of that and I'm going to apply for this thing, right? You know, well, there wasn't one. So we, between our water engineers, the health department, ag and markets, we came up with an appropriate testing plan and transport plan and storage plan that is appropriate for food grade products. So that way with the FDA, because I'm afraid when they do this, it'll literally be overnight. We're ready to go, be able to, you know, list it on our list of ingredients on the label.
Got it. Yeah. That's one of those interesting things that that conversation's been being had for years, just like you said, but it, that would be a very FDA like move to just all of a sudden say, now we're doing it. Get ready. Here you go. You have until like the 31st of December. Thank you.
Yeah. It's going to be one of those like 90-day projects. You know, it's like, oh, right. Okay, you're going to have later. It's like, all right, we're done. We got it.
Exactly. Right. You know, I think a smart investment is investing in a food lab, right? Because people are going to start doing a lot of testing out of nowhere real fast. Well, how about if we do this, Lisa? Let's take a little break and we're going to come back and we're going to taste the applewood and oak aged expression and talk a little bit more about, I think maybe moving forward with Widow Jane and what's going to be, you know, what to look forward to. And then we're going to talk a little bit more on our podcast only segment, Another Shot with Nola Drinks, which you can get by going to noladrinks.com right now, friends. We'll take a little break here on the Nola Drink Show. Come on back.
That Frenchman right back again with that bonnet number.
The next time you're on Frenchman Street, let the sound of live music lead you to Midnight Revival, where the night is always young. Find your spot at the bar or by the stage with your new favorite drink in hand. Live music that pairs perfectly with our lineup of tropical drinks and classic New Orleans cocktails. See what's on the menu at midnightrevival.com. Find out who's playing by following us on Instagram at Midnight Revival NOLA. Find us at 417 Frenchman Street in the Frenchman Hotel, and we'll see you soon for some sips and sounds.
Hi, Brian Diaz, host of the Nola Drink Show here. Check out Nitty Grits Podcasts, a growing network of food, drink, and culture shows. Visit southernfood.org for more.
Goodbye, Joe. I got to go. Me oh my.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks, friends, for listening into the show. We're chatting with my friend Lisa Wicker, president and master distiller for Widow Jane up in Brooklyn, New York. And you're in Brooklyn at the moment, Lisa. We were talking about how you bounce back and forth between Bardstown and New York, but you're there in Brooklyn at the distillery.
I am. I'm here most of the time these days. You know, through COVID, I was here probably about 90% of the time. You know, now it's festival time, as I saw you in New Orleans and just did the something in South Walton Beach, a food and wine festival over the weekend, and gone back to Kentucky for the Jim Beam Institute. And you know, things are rolling again.
That's cool. And so you have, where do you live? Do you live in Brooklyn when you're in New York? Do you have a place there?
I have. It's funny. Yeah, it's just just a little over a mile away from the distillery. So
That's nice. So when the weather's good, you can walk or bike.
Absolutely.
That's exciting. Yeah. I got it. You know, I was saying this, I think, during the last segment. I definitely need to come. I haven't been to New York in, it's been a while. It's probably been about 15 or 20 years. So I need to come pay a visit up in that direction.
If you can't remember, it's been too long.
Yeah. I can't. Unfortunately for me, Lisa, that could be last week. But well, let's talk about this one, because this one's new to me. You kindly sent me a rye, which is oak and applewood aged. Can you tell us about this guy?
Yeah, this is sourced rye. I inherited this project. I shifted it around a little bit. We bring it in and the barrels that it was barreled in, and you know, pop the bungs and put in applewood staves out of Minnesota from a family business up there. In fact, our last order we had got delayed because grandpa got sick. So we're sorry, Grandpa, please get better, and we need some more staves. And so it's that kind of family business. So we, you know, we're certainly keeping the craft in craft, but and then we age it until it's ready, and it varies how long, you know, whether it's heat or cool or, you know, the condition of the apple, what are the base rye whiskey. And then I blend them. They used to vat them, and now I blend them about 5 barrels at a time. Not about, I blend 5 barrels at a time, sort of to match what we're doing with the 10-year, but it's also just a really manageable amount for us, the way our production runs. And I just like how the flavor profile comes out with 5 barrels.
It's great. What does applewood bring to the table?
You know what? It brings a lot of floral notes, obviously, okay. You know, some baked apple and those sorts of things. What I've discovered when I'm experimenting with wood that from trees that flower, frequently you'll get the floral notes, whether you're messing with cherry or pear or applewood. Lots of times you'll smell those blossoms in the, you know, in the whiskey and the finished product. But it, it gives it a little bit, sometimes it leans a little bit more to Calvados, you know, apple brandy, you know, hard cider kind of notes. In fact, you know, I got to where I was really liking, you know, I was goofily calling it, you know, an apple Boilermaker, you know, where you'd have a little bit of and some hard cider. Right. Yeah. It's pretty delicious though. So
it's great. Yeah. When you're popping the staves in, do the barrels last a while? I mean, is like the density of the wood different that you can't keep doing it where then it starts to come apart or something?
I'm not following your question exactly.
Well, so like if you're using two different, because it's oak and applewood staves in the same barrel, right?
Oh, and we just only use the applewood. The oak's coming from the actual oak barrel. Yes.
Got, yes. Okay. So, they're not mixed staves in the barrel. I misunderstood that. Okay. Gotcha. Because yes. I know sometimes when you do that, like with wine, for example, that the different densities of the wood become a problem over time if you have two types of wood staves in the same barrel.
That is very correct. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. That's the reason I usually take it and do them in sequence and not together.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, this is really lovely. And I mean, one of the things that I really like about it, and I love rye, by the way. I know some people, you know, that's not their thing. I don't find it to be... like it's not super baking spice. So I think that it's a little, at least on the flavor profile, it's a little lighter touch on the rye side of things, at least to me.
Yes. Yeah. We're known for a little bit softer and sweeter rye.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I love a good spicy rye, but that's not what our flavor profile is. Like I said, it's a little softer, sweeter, but with enough bite, I still want enough bite in it when I'm blending it, that it holds up in a cocktail.
Yeah, it's 45.5%. So, and I mean, in sipping it, because I find that the mouthfeel is very, very pleasant. And sometimes, you know, I don't find the mid palate to be overly thick. It's actually, when you said Calvados, and that kind of clicked in my head, because it does kind of remind me of that with just the mouthfeel and the viscosity of it kind of seems to lean in that direction.
Yes. Yes. And we just had a cocktail competition in Florida during a thing with, several of the bartenders focusing on the applewood rye, and it really lent itself to a lot of, I'm hesitant to say fruit type cocktails because it also makes you sound like it's going to be sticky sweet, but they weren't, they were very, you know, balanced with and handled the bitterness and things really well in them. They're delicious.
Yeah. This is really nice. You know what I didn't ask you, Lisa, with the 10 year, on the bourbon and then the applewood rye, and I know it varies a little bit. Can you give us like, what's a ballpark retail price point for these?
Oh my gosh. I am like the worst person in the whole world. my gosh. Everybody's going to come. Quite frankly, you know, some of that have shifted a little bit. We've had the good fortune with the 10-year whiskey magazine out of the UK about 6 weeks ago, named us world's best small batch bourbon.
Oh, congratulations. And, that's awesome.
Yeah. And we just double gold it, you know, in San Francisco. We've had, you know, a stack of, wonderful attention. And so I know that's probably shifted the price point a little bit on it. I am embarrassed to tell you, I cannot tell you. If you go to info@widowjane.com, someone will get back to you with the price points on them.
Here's what we'll do, Lisa, since you're sticking around for another shot with Noah Drinks, our podcast, only saying when we take a break, we'll look it up so that at least podcast listeners.
Since I'm in the back of the bar right now recording, I can run to the front of the bar and get the price list.
All right. Well, yeah. So I just want to give people, because I think, you know, lots of times people will go, wow, is this, you know, we didn't really touch on this. Is this a $400 thing or is this a $30, you know? And I always like to let listeners know, you know, when you can get something of this quality, and I know you guys are price friendly in general compared to a lot of brands that are out there.
Well, I'm a little bit hesitant because I've been shocked at some, what I've seen, you know, some of our bottles at a retail. It's, you know, definitely not the suggested price point. That's the only reason I'm going to hesitate at all to provide any prices on here.
But, sure.
Yeah, I can get ballpark.
We'll just go ballpark because I just want people to have a general sense of kind of, you know, because it's, a, and you know this, Lisa, with, you know, I like to say the bourbon nerds, like, you know, a lot of people will tell you, I just picked up a bottle of such and such for $400. And my response is always, is that good? Did you get a good deal? or is that not a good deal? You're asking the wrong guy that question. Is it in a cool decanter or something? I don't know what that means all the time. Well, why don't we do this, Lisa? We got about 2 minutes or so before we close out the portion of the radio show. I will encourage listeners to go to noladrinks.com because we're going to continue the conversation and you can get that there now. But can you tell people, tell us where we can find you, pay you a visit in New York and tell people where we can find stuff online. And we know we can find you on retail shelves and bars and restaurants in all 50 states.
That's right. We're in Red Hook, Brooklyn. There's not a lot of public transportation down here, but if you find us, taking a water taxi from Manhattan is always a good idea. They obviously, the car services come here as well. But once you get here, you're rewarded with cobblestone streets, a block and a half over my right shoulder. You can have an unobstructed view of the Statue of Liberty in Lower Manhattan. So we're literally on the waterfront. And you can find us online at widowjane.com. You can find us at Widow Jane on Instagram. I'm personally at LB Wicker on Instagram. But yeah, we would certainly like to have everybody visit us. You know, we are open late in the week through the weekends. We have tours scheduled, so you can schedule a tour online. And, you know, our bar is open on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We'll expand the hours to Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We do operate under, you know, the New York State Farm Distillery Bar, you know, regulations. Okay. And so we're not open every single day, but.
So can people, Lisa, when they come pay a visit, so you can sign up and do a tour, but you can also just come to the bar too, if you want, right? Or is it?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. We have tasting flights in the bar, right? So if you want to come just taste through the portfolio and, you know, take a look around and we can, you know, sell you bottles out of the bar or out of retail.
Awesome. Perfect. Well, friends, what we're going to do, we're going to close out the portion of the radio show. Again, go to noladrinks.com and get the podcast because we're going to carry on our conversation here in just a few moments. But if you are a radio listener, I do appreciate it. Remember to be kind to one another, use your turn signal, and until next time, cheers, y'all. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for sticking around for another shot with Noah Drinks. Happy to have you here. We're continuing our conversation with Lisa Wicker from Widow Jane Distillery up there in Brooklyn, New York. Here we go. All right, everybody, up another shot with Noah Drinks. Thanks for sticking around, friends. We're chatting with my friend Lisa Wicker up in Brooklyn, New York at Widow Jane. And Lisa, so we want to put a bow on something that we left kind of dangling in the last segment before we closed out the radio portion of the show. And we know that price points vary by state, by you know, whether you're buying it at a bar, whether you're buying it retail. But I just wanted to give people a flavor with the 10-year bourbon that we drank and then the oak and applewood rye that we drank. Just, you know, kind of a general sense of what you might expect to pull out the pocketbook if you bring home a bottle from retail.
Well, my disclaimer will be, if you come see us in Brooklyn, this is the price point.
Okay? There it is. Okay, perfect. Perfect.
That's all. Price where else? the 10-year retails for $69 here in our bar. And the one that you're drinking, the apple and apple wood, is $55.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for clearing that up there. I just, like we were talking about off air, at least I always like to just give people, because we know in the world of whiskey, you know, and when you throw in the secondary market and all that, not even touching that, but even retail for certain things, you know, you're looking at $300-$400 for certain things that, you know, if you're a bourbon nerd out there, you know what I'm talking about. And, you know, I just always like to give people kind of an idea of what they can expect roughly. And that's all very fair. So cool. Well, let's see, Lisa, you were here at New Orleans Bourbon Festival, which we finally, after 2 years of COVID shutdown, listeners know I'm on the board of the charity that puts that on. There's my little disclaimer or full disclosure statement. But you were on a really cool panel, and I'm drawing a blank on the name of Women in Whiskey, or what was the, but it was four very talented, wonderful women in the whiskey industry, yourself included. And it was a great panel. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I think it was Women in Whiskey. I don't know. Yeah, it was, you know, our host person was Maggie Kimbrell. Maggie is a very established whiskey writer, most recently president of Bourbon Women, but she writes for Whiskey Magazine and all kinds of different whiskey publications and is so well known in the industry. So it was an honor. She's, you know, it's an honor that I can call her my friend and, you know, always fun to work with her, you know, in a professional setting. To my right was Victoria Edie Butler. Victoria is the master blender for Uncle Nearest. It's the first time she and I were able to meet in person. And
oh, cool.
I always tell people it's an instant sorority. We're all very different women. We do very different products. We approach things in a very different way, but there's immediately this instant camaraderie the second that you meet somebody that's doing something else in the industry. Joanne Street was to her right. Joanne is the granddaughter of the very famous Jimmy Russell of Wild Turkey. And Joanne is killing it. She is the face of Wild Turkey outside of, you know, I mean, her grandfather and her uncle and her cousin Bruce are, you know, also the face of the brand. But Joanne brings a different kind of energy to the Wild Turkey brand and is a fabulous human being. And her enthusiasm is just absolutely insanely contagious. To her right was Marianne Eats. Marianne got her start as the first female master distiller in Kentucky with Castle and Key and has now gone out on her own as a consultant. And her partner and her kid's dad is a ringmaster for a circus. And so they are on the road. And so very interesting women, very interesting lives. And yeah, it was an honor to be on it. It went by way too fast. The only complaint that I heard about it is it should have been twice as long.
that's a great complaint.
That was from the panelists and from the participants. So it was good energy. It was great to be back, you know, in person and not on a Zoom call with people. But some remarkable stories. I was very honored to be part of that panel.
That's great. You know what? I was telling you before we went on the air, Lisa, that I was able. I probably caught more of that panel than any other because I really wanted to. And it was about 15 minutes because I spent most of my time schlepping AV equipment around Bourbon Fest. But it looked like it was great. And I could tell people were really happy and the bits that I caught were really good. I'll divert here just for a second. I had a chance to meet Victoria from Uncle Nearest as well because my wife and I, Sylvia, went to the Dookie Chase restaurant dinner, which was in partnership with Uncle Nearest. And I got a chance to chat with their team, including Victoria, and what a remarkable story that she is. I mean, you know, being relatively new to the blending world and just hitting the ball out the park.
Yes, she is. Yes, she is. And that's the lovely thing is there's just so many opportunities for so many people. You know, there was a day that if you didn't have a chemical engineering degree or a pedigree, you know, that it was not passed through your family, that the opportunities were going to be not there, but just a lot trickier and more difficult to get in. And now if you're going to willing to roll up your sleeves and put in the work, you know, there's a place for everyone.
That's great. Well, and you know what, Lisa, I kind of harkening back, I think, to when you were on in 2018, what does it mean? And we don't have to talk about this too much, but what does it mean to you to be a woman and a leader in the whiskey world? Because it does come, you know, it comes with responsibility, I assume. And, you know, I know it's something that you take seriously.
It is. And, you try to look back and do a lot of, evaluation of the situations you were in and try to, remove yourself a little bit and say, would that have been any different than if I was a man? And some of them are no. If, before I was thinking, oh my gosh, well, that happened because I'm female. I'm like, no, that just happened because that was not a, great work situation or whatever. And, I know there's a heavy responsibility to be, sure to be inclusive of everyone. I know there's a heavy responsibility to be sure that, I communicate with other young women and women in general, because I did not start in this industry as a young woman. I was certainly a middle-aged woman when I started. And, but I do feel that, the responsibility to be honest with them, about what some of the hurdles may be, because everybody's journey is so different. I'm stumbling a little bit here because it's pretty complex and at the same time, very simple. I mean, it's work hard, figure out what your dream is and don't give up.
There you go. And it's an interesting thing that you said, because I think there's sort of two layers here in a sense, because the whiskey world has always been sort of up until recently, recent couple decades or so, has always been a very closed world just in general in the United States. And so you've already got that kind of layer where it's that sort of, small cadre of people in Kentucky and Tennessee, dominating the landscape. And then typically not, in not all the time, but typically those were also men and white men. And so that you kind of have this layer of already a small group and then already a male dominated industry, just kind of in general. And so there's this sort of two layers that sometimes have to be dealt with or cracked or changed or addressed or understood. Do you think the same? Is that kind of how you see it?
I think some of it's just visibility. I mean, some of the women that I admire most in the industry have been working in the industry for years. They just didn't get any attention. Look at Pam Heilman, who retired recently from Michter's, this master distiller there, but she worked for Beam for years, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at Diageo and Andrea Wilson, you look at Marlene at Milam and Green, in Texas, and she's been in the industry for years. And now, they're starting to come to the forefront that these women were already there. For a long time, some of it was, I don't want to say hold women back. It was just what the rules were. There were rules that women couldn't work on a plant floor because it's like, you can't go up in a ladder in a skirt. They were pretty, right. Now we kind of laugh about them and they sound rather archaic, but at the time it was the culture. Right. And so there were so many women already working in the distilleries on bottling lines in the front office, And so really it wasn't that they weren't there already. It was just that they hadn't really crossed into production, but a lot of tasters were women, right. Already they knew taste and smell biologically, better than men. And so they were already there, but the attention has just come more recently.
And that's a really good way to put it, because and the outward facing people that you would see associated with the whiskey world were like the Jimmy Russells of the world. And that had always kind of been that way and not really seeing, much else.
No. And the hurdles haven't been that anybody closed the door. For me personally, it's been, the hurdles have been, maybe family dynamics in some businesses or this or that. And so, like I said, if I change myself up, it's like, well, if I was a man, would they be in the same? Some of them, yeah, they would have been the same hurdles. Mm-hmm. And overall, people have been welcoming and forthcoming with all sorts of wonderful, education and opportunities. But do we have some places to go? Yeah, we do. But I think it's more about inclusion and not specifically to women,
That's a good point too. And I was just going to add that I think having been to this was the fourth New Orleans Bourbon Festival, just using this as an example. This is the first time that I have been involved with putting it on, but I had been to all three as a member of the media prior. And this was easily, and well, long way to go. Some of the programming was built around inclusivity, like your panel. There were one or two others. Some of the work of the charities changing, but the makeup of the audience at the festival was easily the most diverse that I've seen of the four festivals by a long shot. A lot more women being there and a lot more people of color there as well. And it's something that I know the organization is cognizant of and trying to deal with and do better at. And I think the industry as a whole, at least it's something that we're talking about.
Yeah. And like I said, I don't know that it was anybody was necessarily being excluded. It's just that they weren't necessarily being extended an invitation to be included.
Way to put it. And that's the whole thing, right? And I like what a lot of my friends who say in different facets of the industry, if nobody invites you to a seat at the table, you know, make your own table.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about this, Lisa, before I let you go and get back to blending batches of good juice. Tell us, you know, we talked about all this wonderful stuff that's happened with Widow Jane since we last chatted in 2018. You were telling me, I think this was actually off the air, but great accolades that you got at the San Francisco Spirits, International Spirits Competition and recognition in the UK. And I'll have you elaborate on those, but maybe can you kind of give us a couple little nuggets of some things to look forward to, at least in the immediate future that you know are coming?
Yes. I think it was the night before the Bourbon Festival panel that we discovered that Whiskey Magazine out of the UK had named us world's best small batch bourbon for 2022. So it's not, you know, about beating the big guys, but guess what? We beat the big guys. You know? Uh-huh. So that part was great. Yeah, we had some double golds come in from San Francisco. Drizzly picked us as the fastest growing like craft brand in their portfolio.
I saw that. That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, we broke into some top 20 polls where we were the only quote unquote craft brand in there. You know, the Heaven Hill purchase of us a couple months ago, it's been a whirlwind. And we've had a lot of good fortune. And I have the most remarkable team. I have some really terrific human beings. Each one of them is an individual I'm lucky to be able to work with. And them together as a team is, you know, it's just a joy. And yeah, and we get a lot done for the size. We have 15 of us, and 15 of us do everything, front of the house, bartending. I cross-train everybody. Even my bartenders have forklift certification and steel-toed boots, because when a truck comes, it's all hands on deck, you know. So, but it, you know, I think it helps with the camaraderie and you know. But like I said, I told people yesterday, like, you can't teach work ethic. Right. I can't teach personality. I can't teach work ethic. I can teach everything else. And I just had the good fortune to meet some really remarkable human beings that I just happened to work with here.
That's great. Hey, and it makes a lot of sense too, right? When you have somebody who's, you know, in front of house for you, if they've done, you know, if they've done the dirty work in the back, they're just far better at explaining what's going on. And they're just a better ambassador for the brand, right?
Absolutely. And on the other hand too, you know, our production team, you know, they're invited to come to the, you know, they're doing some of the special events and things as well, you know, so that part's great. You know, one of our warehouse managers is going to, you know, work Belmont, and yeah, we've got a bunch of stuff coming up. We've got Whiskey X coming up and a lot of Whiskey Fests coming up and Tales of the Cocktail and all kinds of things coming up.
Yeah, so that's very exciting. You'll be down here, for my local listeners, you'll be down here in New Orleans for Tales of the Cocktail in the third week of July and doing the Meet the Distillers event. You and I were talking about that before we went on the air. That is, for people who have been to Tales, that's like a highlight. So I'm really excited that you're gonna be there. And we'll certainly have to get together. Let me know when you have your travel dates. I'll give you a couple of hotel recommendations, because the hotel where Tales is at's already sold out of the rooms, which is amazing. I slept on that. And so, yeah, anyway, but it'll be great to see you down here. Can you do me a favor, yeah, Lisa? Yeah. Can you tell people one more time where we can connect with you and Widow Jane online and at the distillery for tours and tastings and all that good stuff?
Yes, you can always email us at info@widowjane.com. It actually goes to several different team members. And so if someone where their specialty is, we'll address your question and get back to you. WidowJane.com for our website, at Widow Jane on Instagram. And my personal Instagram is at LB Wicker.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Lisa. It's been great chatting with you again. Let's make it sure that it's not 4 years, 4 years this time. Or three, yes, and a half.
And if I have a few seconds, I'd like to tell your listeners too, you know, how instrumental you were and helping me, you know, with Widow Jane in the early times and getting the message out of what it was we were doing here. And I really am appreciative.
Thank you so much. And you told me that at Bourbon Fest, and that really made my day. So thank you so much. And it's great to see you and great to have you back on. And We'll do it again, and we'll actually have a drink. We were so busy at Bourbon Fest. At least maybe at Tails, we can have a drink together when somebody's not pouring for somebody else or plugging in AV equipment or things like that.
I'm in.
Awesome. Sounds great, Lisa. Thanks so much. Friends, I'll a brief musical interlude, and I'll be back to close things out. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show this week. Friends, happy to have had you here as always. Great show. Really great to chat with Lisa, and so happy that she has taken on the mantle of master distiller. Well-deserved, as she said. She's been in the business for over 20 years, and she's a very humble person, as you probably gathered, and kind of took a little prodding, I think, from what I gather, to actually take on the title. But if there is somebody in the whiskey world who deserves that title and that role, it is certainly Lisa. And I thank her for sharing some of her views and experiences on being in the Women in Whiskey panel as well. And I'll share something with you in just a second. I just want to remind you of the two shows that we have coming up. We're going to be chatting with the folks from Bayou Boogaloo, great music festival coming up here shortly in New Orleans. And we're going to be chatting with a group of concierges from New Orleans, including my friend Leah Hoyt, the president of the New Orleans Concierge Association. Right after that, we're still trying to nail down all the details on that, but that's the plan as it stands right now, friends. But here's a little thing, anecdote that I wanted to share with you. When I bumped into Lisa, which I mentioned at the top of the show, and we talked about it during the show, at New Orleans Bourbon Fest in March, I had never met her before in person, and I went up and introduced myself to her after her panel, and she obviously immediately knew who I was, and we got to chatting, and we touched on this in the show a little bit, but it really meant a great deal to me. And I usually don't share stuff like this on the program, but you know, she said during the interview that there, as she put it, at the festival, there were like five really good things that happened in short order when the brand really started to take off. And one of those things was being on this program. And it really helped get a lot of recognition for Widow Jane. It ultimately led to their participation in New Orleans Bourbon Festival because of my connections there, I suppose. And so on. But just, it was very humbling to hear that come from somebody who is so accomplished and is such a star in the whiskey world to thank me and recognize that being a part of this program was something that contributed to their success. I could not be happier or prouder to play that small little part, because it was a small little part. It's all on them. They've done this themselves, but happy to be there along the ride with them, and great to see all the great places that they're going. And it's really good juice, so pick some up. Man, it's tasty. A couple bottles they sent me that we tasted on the show, I'm going to be enjoying those for a little while. Friends, that's it for the No Drink Show. Here's to you.